Chapter 7, Mrs. Greenberg. Her late husband, Martin, had believed in miracles, but the cancer took him just the same. Since he'd gone, she'd tried to bring that belief around again, thinking it to be natural to the family, divinely intended to live in her little blue-gray house. And this evening, for the first time in years, it sat on the porch ring with her as she sipped her iced tea. It smiled for her and through her, and she smiled back. A miracle in the shape of her garden. Lately, she'd begun to dream of waking up, stretching and flexing through the pain in her arthritic joints, easing to the window to discover that, as if by magic, the garden was once again whole. And now, in the dusk of a cool spring evening, the garden was whole, trimmed, the grass mowed, beds laid with fresh cedar chips, freshly raked, bags of leaves and trimmings bundled at the curb. Not an unexplained miracle, exactly, because she'd watched the neighbor boy do it all, day after day. Barely a head taller than he, she'd stood at his side and shown him the junctions at which rose bushes begged to be trimmed and aphids to be sprayed, and the weeds that had to come out, and the ground cover meant to be cut back, watered, encouraged to flourish. But miracles can and do have middlemen, she decided. And then she decided that her iced tea tasted sweeter than usual that night, though made to the same proportions, and that the cold glass did not ache her arthritis the way it usually did. And as if to dampen this perfect balance, just the moment she discovered it, her son, Richard, came up the walk for his bi-monthly visit. He'd been a smart boy, Richard, a brilliant boy, but seemingly with no payoff. Unlike the neighbor boy, who appeared quite simple and average in intelligence, yet seemed to prove otherwise with his very willingness to be where he was needed. At 42, Richard was not a willing man, nor was he serious, unless anxious counts, and not particularly cheerful or helpful. But maybe his intelligence is not associated with cheerful willingness. Too bad she could not trade in Richard's intelligence at this late date. Seemed its only real purpose was to lose him every job he ever tried, being too good as he was for all of them. And she had no more money to lend him, and would not if she could. He stood on her porch step. Hi, Mom.
So, what do you think?
About what?
The garden.
He spun on the heels of his two-tone leather boots and flipped his dark glasses up to the top of his thin hairline.
Shoot! You paid somebody? I told you I'd do it.
I didn't pay. The neighbor boy did it for free. Very funny.
He did.
It must have taken hours.
He's been working for days. You haven't been around.
I told you I'd do it.
Yes, you told me, but you didn't do it.
At first, Trevor had just come by to talk, and that was good enough, and Mrs. Greenberg had never expected more. She was right near the end of his paper route, which he changed around just a little so her house would be the very last. He'd leave his big, heavy old bicycle on its side on her lawn and bring the paper right to her door and knock, knowing as he did that it was a bother for her to go out after it. She was so pleased by his thoughtful attention that she always offered him a glass of cherry Kool-Aid, which she bought specially for him. And she'd sit at her kitchen table and talk to her about school mostly and football, and then a special project he had thought up for his social studies class, and how he needed more people he could help. And she said she had some gardening to be done, though she couldn't afford to pay much. He said she wasn't to pay anything at all to him, and what she paid to others needn't be money, unless that was what she had plenty of. And then he drew some circles for her on a piece of paper, with her name in one, and told her about paying forward.
It's like random acts of kindness, she'd said,
but he disagreed. It was not random, not at all. And therein lay its beauty, built right into the sweet organization of the deal. It was a foggy Saturday morning when he came by, 6 o'clock sharp, as promised, and they'd stood in the mist in the front yard, the blue-gray paint peeling from her worried little house, and the smell of damp in the air, and little drips from the oak trees overheard cool in her hair. He touched the roses as if they were puppies with their eyes still closed, or rare old books edged in gold leaf, and she knew he'd love her garden and it would love him back. And that something was being returned to her which had been away too long and had kept too much of her away with it. "How is the project going so far?" she'd said, because she could see it was important to him, a subject he liked to talk about. His brow furrowed, and he said, "Not so good, Mrs. Greenberg, not so good." He said, "Do you think that maybe people won't really pay it forward? That maybe they'll just say they will, or even sort of mean to, but maybe something will go wrong, or maybe they'll just never get around to it?" She knew it was a genuine problem in his mind, so she said, "I can only in truth speak for myself, Trevor, and say that I really will get around to it and take it every bit as seriously as I know you do." She could still remember his smile. He'd worked so hard that day and wouldn't even stop for a Kool-Aid break but once. And when he'd finished, she'd tried to slip a $5 bill in his hand, above and beyond, and in no way connected to paying it forward. But he wouldn't hear of it. He worked all weekend and four after school and after paper out days on the garden, and said next week he would come around and paint her fence and window boxes and porch railing with two fresh coats of white. She wondered if her son Richard would notice the difference. She walked to the grocery store slowly, loosening her tight joints and muscles as they warmed to the strain. It was late dusk on the Camino, with the car headlights glowing spooky in the half light as she pulled her little two-wheeled wire cart behind her over the sidewalk cracks. Mrs. Greenberg always took the same route to the same store, being comforted by sameness. Terry was working as a checker that evening, and Matt as a bagger. Two of her favorite people in the world. No more than 20, either one of them, but quick with a smile for an older woman, no looking down on her, always thinking to ask about her day, her arthritis, and still listening when she gave the answer. She bought 12 cans of cat food and a 5-pound bag of dry cat chow for the strays who counted on her, and cherry Kool-Aid for the boy, and Richard's favorite brand of soda, and tea, and skinless chicken breasts, and bran cereal for herself. All the while thinking, Terry and Matt, that's two who probably could be counted on to pass it along. And maybe that nice lady at the North County Cat Shelter would make a fitting third. Richard would have a cow, but maybe tough love was just what he needed. And with that thought fresh in her mind, she returned to the cooler and put his soda back on the shelf. He could drink Kool-Aid or iced tea, or go home and take his money problems with him. "Good evening, Mrs. Greenberg," Terry said, running the groceries across the scanner. "I drove by your house today. The garden looks wonderful." It pleased her in an uplifting way, like a dance with the good-looking boy in high school, that someone besides herself should notice and care. "Isn't it wonderful?" she said. "Trevor McKinney did all that. Such a good boy. Do you know him?" Terry didn't imagine that she did, but it obviously pleased her to see Mrs. Greenberg so beaming, and Matt too, who mirrored back her own smile as he bagged her cat food. "Nice to see you so happy tonight, Mrs. Greenberg." He loaded her cart carefully so it would balance just right. It would be nice to see Matt happy too, though by design she would not be around to see it. Young people needed a little nest egg for college, maybe, though it would not be enough for tuition, maybe books and clothes, or whatever they might choose to spend it for, because she felt they could both be trusted. And that nice lady at the cat shelter,
She would put it right back into spaying and neutering and other vet costs, no doubting her priorities. Yes, she thought, back out in the crisp, clean-smelling night, it's right. She'd make the calls first thing in the morning. Her chest first began to hurt on the way home. Not her heart, but more her lungs, like a bad congestion, and she stopped often to catch her breath. She was not such an old woman, she had to remind herself, just over retirement age. But since losing Martin, her body seemed to turn in on itself, as though it couldn't wait. The arthritis had tripled its hold since then, and she'd catch any little thing that was going around. Stopping often to rest, she took a detour, which she never did, by Trevor McKinney's house. Such a nice little house, with a curvy shingle roof, heavy with vegetation, but never overgrown looking. Too bad about that twisted, awful truck in the driveway. Mrs. Greenberg imagined Trevor's mother must want it gone, want the simple beauty of her place back. Maybe even dreamed of it the way she herself had dreamed for her garden. They had company, she saw, stopping for a breath at the walkway, a white Volkswagen Beetle, nicely cared for, parked out front. A new gentleman friend. Good. She'd seen the old one. Didn't think much of the type. And she could see through the window into the brightly lit dining room, the right side of his face in profile. A well-dressed black man, so handsome and refined. Well, good then. Good for them. Mrs. Greenberg hoped Trevor's mother wouldn't listen to anybody, wouldn't let any small minds get in her way, that had tried to tell her not to marry Martin because he was a Jewish boy. But she wouldn't listen, and he'd been the best husband a woman could ask for. A good man is a good man. Maybe Trevor's mother would get married. Nice for the boy if she did. She'd never met Trevor's mother, but knew she would like her, because look who she had raised. A boy who could love a garden for a sick, arthritic woman who couldn't love it enough. You have a good woman there, she said quietly, out loud, to the handsome, refined man in the window, who, of course, did not hear. A good woman with a good boy. You take care of them. I know you will. She arrived home at last, winded and sore-chested. She took a hot bath and laid herself coughing to bed, knowing that whatever happened now, the garden was tended. The porch would take a coat of paint. Tomorrow, she'd make some calls, some arrangements. After that, it didn't matter. Everything was tended, or would be, by then.